another edition of the Security Ledger podcast. I'm your host, Paul Roberts, the editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger. It's tax season again in the United States, and in the weeks leading up to the April 15th tax filing deadline, hundreds of millions of Americans will be elbow deep in W-2 forms, 1040 forms, and 1099 forms, as well as piles of receipts as they get ready to tell Uncle Sam about how much money they made and how much tax they owe. Online, it's also a busy season for fraud artists who are rushing to file phony tax returns on behalf of Americans in hope of collecting hefty tax refunds from the government before either their victim or Uncle Sam is the wiser. How big is the tax ID fraud problem? According to data from the IRS shared with the blog Krebs on Security, in 2015, the government's tax agency suspended the processing of 4.8 million suspicious returns. It stopped an additional 1.4 million confirmed identity theft returns, totaling $8.7 billion. To help understand the tax ID fraud problem, the Security Ledger sat down with Michael Brummer, who's the Vice President of Experian's Data Breach Resolution Division, to talk about it. I started by asking Michael about the company's data on W-2-focused phishing scams, one of the most common ways that fraudsters get a hold of the data needed to file fraudulent claims.
Since the third week in January, we started to see the scams that are tied to W-2s that resulted then in identity theft or a data breach start to come back this year. It was the same thing in 2016, although we're up through the last 8 weeks about 25% on incidents related to W-2 in 2017 versus 2016.
And 2016, I'm guessing, was an increase over 2015, right? So these lines are going up.
Yes. Yeah, the three-year average is up. We did, you know, maybe 15 or 20 a week in 2015. It went up about 30%. And now, over the last 5 weeks, we're averaging 35 to 45 incidents per week specifically related to W-2.
We know how credit card information gets stolen. You know, companies get hacked into and have, you know, their point of sales systems compromised and things like that. How does tax ID fraud typically happen? In other words, how are the cyber criminals getting a hold of data so that they are filing tax returns as individuals?
So typically what happens is it's a social engineering scheme. So someone posing as the C-level officer, might be the CEO, the CFO, ask an employee who has access to the W-2s, whether it's in HR or finance, and says, hey, I need you to send me the file or series of files that have the W-2. And the unsuspecting employee, seeing that it's coming from their boss's boss or the CEO, they, you know, want to be the dutiful employee. They don't suspect anything wrong. They don't question it. And they go ahead and send that information to the individual who has either spoofed the email address or has actually taken over the email for that person. And once it's sent, it's gone. And the thing about W-2s is that not only can you execute a fraudulent refund request, but the information that's contained in a W-2 will allow you to do other things beyond just filing a fraudulent tax return or request for refund, such as opening mortgages, lines of credit, car loans, along with other stuff. So it's very valuable information that once it's lost, it can be used multiple times to commit fraud.
So this is a kind of a subset of the business email compromise problem where they're using either, again, access or just spoofing an address and using that to get the payroll information more or less from the company, right?
That's correct.
And these are, I mean, that would presume that often then these attackers are doing a little bit of homework anyway to figure out who the right person within the company to email with this request is. And then, as you said, either knowing who the senior executive is or actually having access to that man or woman's account to send the email.
That's correct. And one of the things that's happened and why you've seen the increase is that it's pretty easy, especially with small businesses. And to give you a range, the smallest event we serviced was one individual, but the largest one was up to 32,000 employees so far in 2017. And the hackers have gotten sophisticated enough over the years where they have a group of people that will source out information for a small business and find out who's doing what to whom, their names, be able to compromise. And they've got it set up in such a way that it's an assembly line of setting up these companies and then preparing to execute the attacks. And why they're successful is they can use the same basic tactics to go ahead and infiltrate the company, and then they make it repeatable and predictable. So whether you hit a small business in one sector or one state or one country, they can go ahead and do it again and again using the same threat vectors.
So when you're saying you're seeing 25 or 30 of these a week, these are 30 companies, each of which could have, you know, dozens to hundreds or thousands of employees, right?
Yes, that's correct. I'm referring to number of companies compromised.
And are there particular types of companies, Michael, that are particularly vulnerable to these attacks? Are these generally leveled at smaller firms, larger firms? Does it matter?
It's mostly small businesses. That's the sweet spot. The large multinational firms don't have as much access, and there's better training with financial institutions, credit unions, retailers. It's these small businesses that are probably most at risk from what we've seen. 95% are small businesses, less than 500 employees. In fact, I mentioned, the range in breaches earlier from one to the largest one we serviced was about 32,000 this year, but the average size of business is about 600 employees.
What can organizations and also individuals do to insulate themselves from these type of attacks? It seems, from the user's or the victim's perspective, this is something that's really out of your control. If your employer gets fooled into sending your W-2 to the wrong person, that's nothing that you have any control over.
Paul, of all the instances we service, not just limited to tax fraud, employees represent 85% of the problem in a breach or the root cause. And so the number one thing any employer can do is educate their employees. And we saw recently, and we've done some work with the Poneman Institute in terms of surveying employers, and we found only 45% of companies make employee job-specific security training. Only about 45% make it mandatory. And 43% only gave one basic course in security and privacy training, and less than half of that same number of organizations, about 49%, had any sort of social engineering or phishing training as part of their employee security. So it's a real issue when you have such low numbers when it comes to the number one cause of breaches in general, let alone the specific type of targeting for phishing that has caused these W-2 breaches.
Do we know if the government, if the IRS, is getting any better at spotting those fraudulent patterns? Figuring out, okay, Paul has filed a 1099 for the last 20 years. Suddenly he's filing a 1040EZ. That's a flag for us. The types of things that, credit card companies do to spot patterns of fraudulent behavior.
I really don't have a good answer for that question because I'm not an insider within the IRS. They're not a current client of ours. The biggest issue that we found, and it's not limited to Experian, there have been other companies that have asked for the ability to get a fee anytime someone files a return in general. So if the IRS were to give us just their simple, hey, Mike Bremer has filed a return, and if I was a member of any identity theft protection or credit monitoring subscription, I could go ahead and get an alert that says, hey, somebody has filed an IRS return on this date. You would know that and immediately be able to, before a refund was processed, because it takes, you know, 48 to 72 hours, and they've delayed that even further. You could immediately alert the IRS to say, hey, I haven't filed my taxes, or I've already filed my taxes, and this is a, you know, this is fraudulent activity, because you as a consumer would be the one, best one to let them know that, but they haven't done that despite repeated requests.
From your position there at Experian, I mean, what do you see in terms of the high-level trends? Are there reasons for optimism that we're getting in front of this epidemic of identity theft and fraud related to it?
Well, I can tell you, and I'll give you a couple data points. We've been doing data breach resolution now for about 13 years, and we've serviced just under 190,000 different incidents with folks having identity theft, and that's the actual fraud, whether it's credit card fraud or full-blown identity theft. We've had about 190,000 people that we've helped through fraud resolution, and that is from roughly 16 to 17,000 different individual data breaches over that period of time. Last year alone, we serviced almost 4,000 different incidents, and it's growing at about 20% per year, where they say anywhere between 13 and 15% of the population, and we've got 330 million people here in the U.S., between 13 and 15% of the population have had some sort of ID fraud or identity theft occur in that period of time. So it is not slowing down, and I think you're going to see a lot more reporting of it, given some of the new laws. There's a law going into effect over in the European Union called GDPR, and it will require companies that have a notifiable breach to report to the Data Protection Authority within that country within 72 hours. So the regimen that started back with California's state breach notification law in 2003 is going to come to Europe, and you're going to see the reporting of the breaches skyrocket because of that.
I saw a survey from a security firm that suggested that Americans are not particularly concerned about tax ID theft. This is a company called CyberScout, and they said from their survey, 58% are not worried about tax fraud. Does that jive with your company's data, or what's your sense about how aware of this problem the public is? Because obviously public awareness is part of addressing the problem.
For the people that I've actually sat and listened to on the phone when they deal with one of our fraud resolution agents to help them resolve their issue with the IRS, I have not sensed any lack of concern at all. I think there is a heightened awareness, and you yourself had mentioned the last couple of years you've had tax ID fraud for you and your wife. It's a serious incident, and it's very scary when you realize that information is gone, because once it's gone, like the genie in the bottle analogy, you can't put it back. So you're always at risk, even with a PIN, let alone with other parts of your life, because you can't. It's very hard to change your Social Security number, hard to change your name and address. Yeah, you can get a new driver's license number or a new passport number, but Social Security number, name, and address are pretty basic identity elements. And I see people being more and more concerned because their information is out there and they have to always be looking over their shoulder. So I think it's a much bigger issue than that survey would indicate.
Yeah. So you said one fix, obviously, is for companies to really start investing in training and educating their employees and staff around, you know, the phishing attacks and the other strategies that cyber criminals use to get them to divulge sensitive information or documents like W-2s. Are there other things either that companies can do or individuals that will have a payoff in terms of keeping them safe from these types of attacks?
Well, I think now that it's become very apparent that W-2s, and again, every single company who has an employee has a W-2 regime. So it's not like not every company has consumer credit cards, or not every company handles passport data, but every single company that does business with an employee has to have a W-2 protocol. So the handling, the transfer, the encryption of W-2s needs to be a focus because of what we've just been talking about in the epidemic of W-2 breaches. The other thing to, again, another line of defense is the IRS just has to continue to up its game in terms of the protocols for tax filing. I think although it's nice and convenient for some people that don't have access to the internet to file paper returns, but just like HIPAA and HITECH, which required all documents within hospitals, doctor's office, pharmacies, and that to be electronic for security reasons, I think the IRS should focus more on electronic security and protocols and get away from paper altogether. When you're talking about tax information, everybody knows that that's very sensitive. For the last couple of years, outside of W-2s, and W-2s may end up being one of our largest segments of the business, healthcare breaches have been the largest segment where we've seen companies lose data. And these are hospitals, these are doctor's offices, pharmacies, insurance companies. And when you lose healthcare data, because you not only can get treatment where you don't have insurance, or you can use someone else's insurance for a pre-existing condition, let alone the resale value on the dark web, is higher than any other type of data. And I mean name, address, potentially social security number, but also an insurance ID, let alone medical records, you're seeing healthcare being another area where hackers are still going ahead and being very successful. So I would just say, I would caution people across the board when they're dealing with any type of healthcare information, you don't have to give your social security number up when you seek treatment at a doctor's office or a hospital. You don't need that. All they're trying to do is get some information to find you if they need to go ahead and get payment, but they don't absolutely need a social, as one example.
Right. So push back against some of those loose data collection practices.
That's correct.
Michael Brummer, thank you for coming in and speaking to the Security Ledger podcast. We really enjoyed having you.
My pleasure, Paul. Thanks. Have a great day.
Michael Brummer is the Vice President of Experian's Data Breach Resolution Group.